It's HPR1, and I'm Dave Lawrence. Joining us on the line today is a very down-to-earth rock musician, perhaps one of the more so among Rock and Roll Hall of Fame members. He's a vet of Jefferson Airplane and the band that he's bringing to the islands, Hot Tuna. It's guitarist Jorma Kaukonen, recently released the solo album Ain't in No Hurry. It includes some special material I'm hoping to hear about from the late, great Woody Guthrie, and he's taking time for HPR and All Things Considered right now. Hey there, Jorma. Aloha.
Aloha, man. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too, for sure. It's been a long time. It is.
Well, it won't be too much longer. We'll be there before you know it. This has worked out really great. Today, I've been on a motorcycle ride all day long. I pulled off the road because I know you were going to call. I'm sitting at a picnic bench. I can see my bike, so I don't need to worry about it. It's a beautiful day, and we're talking. How good does it have to get?
It doesn't get much better than that. I like that.
Not much.
Very appreciative. That's a lesson in itself, your approach.
Truly, truly.
So the Ain't in No Hurry, the title itself just seems to go with what you were just talking about, relaxing by the side of the bike, taking in the quieter moments. and it's true, man. It's a collection of not only original music, but it's also a variety of interpretive selections.
Sure. And like you said, it really describes who I am today. But the way it all came about is we had this guy at the ranch a couple of years ago as a student. His name was Jim Egan, and we have an open mic on our little ranch weekends, and Jim played this song. My wife said, "That's a great song, you got to do it." And I listened to it, and I said, "You're absolutely right." So Jim is a very talented musician, but he's not a professional. I don't think he ever thought his song was going to have this kind of long legs. Now, I don't see him retiring from the amount of royalty he's going to make on a record that I make. I'm not Taylor Swift, for better or worse. But in any case, you just think about things. You know, 74 years old, I don't need to be in a hurry, you know, because I'm pretty much happy with where I am so far. I'm healthy, and my kids are doing good. I get to play music. I get to talk with you. Once again, how good does it have to get? When I was younger, everything seemed so important in a different kind of way. I don't know what I thought before. I don't know. I'm more serene than I used to be. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
If I can paraphrase, it's like when you're younger, the things that are important to you, they're based around things that are here, material, and ultimately seem pedestrian when compared to the deeper things.
You're right. Sad but true.
Talk about that Woody Guthrie thing, though, brother.
Sure. Nora Guthrie is the guardian of the Guthrie legacy. She's Woody's daughter, and I've known her for a number of years, and she had offered an opportunity to write some music for some Woody stuff, and here we were. We're doing the Ain't No Hurry project, and we're about halfway through, and I started to get in a hurry because I realized this would be a great time to get a hold of Nora, so I told her what we were up to, and she sent four Woody tunes. I got in a Dropbox thing, and they were like photographs of the manuscripts in his handwriting. It was so cool. Three of the four songs were sort of like freeform, almost like beat poetry. It could have heard like a jazz accompaniment, but not a song.
Right.
But the last one, the one we did, Stuff for Little Children, had five verses, four lines of verse. I'm all over that.
It had a structure that lent itself.
Totally. I need structure. So anyway, so we looked at that. and then, of course, we decided, yeah, that's the one we're going to do. And I realized we've got a couple of days and we haven't written the music for Stuff for Little Children yet. So we sat down and I played that lick. And we just started jamming and the song evolved in like 15 minutes. Now, I teach songwriting periodically. This is not the best way to write a song. But it worked this time, thank goodness.
What an honor, like you said, to get
totally.
To.
And that's the bottom line, too. You know, Woody, wherever you are, buddy, it was an honor working with you.
We were talking about this a moment ago, and I'd like to hear a bit more about it. Seasons in
sure.
The field, the observations
sure.
That inform it.
In some respects, there are many really autobiographical aspects to that song. At the beginning of that song was how I felt when I got out of high school my senior year in 1959, driving around, putting gas in the car, buying strings for the guitar. And then a sort of stream of consciousness thing happened, and it got beyond just trying to write an autobiography. Metaphor of seasons in the field, things die so other things can grow, all that stuff.
As you look back at yourself, things that are about you that you think have changed come back.
One of the places that I could go to with this before I get into my take on it is that Shakespeare thing. Jake, Seven Ages of Man. You start out as a baby, and then at the end of life, you're puking all over yourself again. I mean, you sort of return to where you started. You start out, and you know, of course, when you're a kid, you're just a kid. But then if you're somebody like myself, your art gets taken seriously. Now, but then the airplane happened, all this kind of stuff, and then you start to get all full of yourself, you know, like you're entitled. You go through the selfish years or whatever. I mean, for me anyway, I'm not saying everybody does that, but then you get to a point in your life and you realize that, hey, listen, it's not all about me. It's about my friends. It's about my family. It's about my ability to do what I've done all my life. I've been pretty much able to write my own ticket all my life, and I've come to really appreciate that. I mean, I think there's a time when I sort of took it for granted. Then you go through some lean years and you realize, well, wait a minute. you can get it and it can be taken away. You know, you see all these t-shirts, life is good. Life isn't always good. We all know that. Stuff happens. And that is life. But I think basically speaking, it's good. And as my dad used to say, may he rest in peace, life is a series of successful adaptations. And so far, I'm adapting pretty well. And that's not original thought.
Kind of like what you're saying with the Shakespeare. A lot of these concepts have been around for a very long time, and they're truths that we sometimes forget in the course of life. That journey of the ego is probably a very similar one for a lot of folks.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And, you know, I don't think it's unnatural. I think that it's part of a maturing process, and believe me, in case my wife ever hears this interview, I'm not suggesting that I'm completely mature yet. But you know what I mean.
I do, my brother.
It's a process.
Exactly. And on that, the concept of process, this record comes out. Then you come back with Jack, who we'll talk about that unique relationship in a moment.
Sure.
But for folks coming to the Hot Tuna Show, which can be an eclectic, inclusive kind of place.
Absolutely.
Does the material from Ain't No Hurry find a home there?
Sure, and I'll tell you a quick funny story. I did an acoustic remake of a song that I did back in the 70s with Hot Tuna, that ballroom crystal ball thing, and we needed a bass part. I thought about asking my friend Myron or Larry to play bass, but then we realized that there's only one person who could play bass on this song, and that would have to be Jack. So I call him up and I tell him, listen, Jack, I'm re-recording Ballroom Crystal Ball, and I want you to play bass. And he goes, well, Yorma, don't you think that sort of blurs the lines between, and he goes on with this blurring the lines between Hot Tuna and Yorma Soul, whatever that is. And I let him talk for about 9 or 10 minutes, and I said, Jack, I'm going to say one thing. I played on your record. And then he said, okay, I'll do it. So he did. So anyway, that sort of dovetails into the Jack thing. You know, Jack and I, he's my oldest friend. We started playing together in 1958. If we were doing a three-way interview, well, it'd really be easy on me because I wouldn't have to say anything. You know, people always said at gigs and go, hey, Jack, say something. Well, let me tell you, Jack is never at a loss for words when he has something to say. We're really different people, kind of like the odd couple of rock and roll or whatever. But we don't agree about everything, absolutely not. But we've never argued about stuff. We don't have band meetings. And we've always respected each other as men and as artists. And as a result, we can get together anytime and we don't have to overcome some noxious event that one of us has perpetrated on the other.
It's just remarkable. I really appreciate getting to hear about it and just to spend a little time with you.
Thanks, man. Tell you, honestly, also, for guys like us that have been around for so long, we appreciate guys like you that allow us to have these conversations because time moves on and not everybody's interested in my deep thoughts.
God bless you. You travel safe, brother.
Back at you, brother. I'll see you out there on Wahoo.
Take care.
Thanks, man.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.